I know you had the tuner thing, but how did that fit into the line?
Well, it was a college friend, Dan Bump, and I had got together during the time I was working with, late in the time I was working with Red Allen and Frank Wakefield. That was in Washington that we were working, but the thing is, okay, I was in this Air Force Reserve program, and the fact is I couldn't move my, or for various reasons didn't want to change my address to Washington, D.C. and get transferred down there. So every month from Washington, I would drive up and do my military weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And since I used to live there, it was, you know, I'd spend a day and see some friends. And so I was in touch with this friend, with Dan Bump, for, I guess, sort of continuously since college. And he was into sports cars, and I was into antique cars, and he was into modern materials, and I was into banjo playing, and he was into machine work, and
mm-hmm.
So was I, and so we sort of gravitated towards this thing. We decided, hey, why don't we build a banjo? And then it changed tack when we decided, well, since we're not sure how many banjo players want to have you know, high-tech or a different banjo, at least why don't we try to make something that they can buy if they've got a banjo already. And we thought that the tuners, that the idea of changing the tuning had never been really engineered, and the cams are really sort of, well, we thought they had their disadvantages and that it should be possible. So, in fact, we built that up during the winter of 63, and I had every intention of pursuing that until I got my opportunity to go work with Bill Monroe. So we did some by correspondence from Nashville, and I even continued to return from Boston from Nashville to Boston for 2 months for my military service, and finally did put in for a transfer of to a Nashville unit. And and so I got the first prototypes, which he completed once I was no longer around there to work on them. He sent them to me while I was in Nashville, and that's when I showed them to Earl. And I still have those first prototypes, which are still work great, and they're and the second prototype as well, which is slightly more compact, and those are the ones, the second prototypes, the ones I finished by hand.
Okay.
And so when I, after working with Bill, when I went to Europe, when I got back to Boston, that's when the two of us began to work real seriously on these tuners. And that's also when I began hanging out with a jug band and finally getting asked to work. But working with a jug band is nothing like a full-time job. It's just, I mean, we rehearse a couple hours when we can, and then sometimes it's a couple hours a day, maybe, but still, I mean, there's not, I mean, there wasn't enough work to keep, to fill up lots of time. So that's when we got the tuners in production, and Earl became involved as a partner in the business once we had everything geared up and going. He had to become a partner since he wanted to lend his name to them, but he was already under contract with a Vega company, and he said that because of that contract, he couldn't lend his name to anything else unless he was involved as a shareholder.
Oh.
And we had, and we, hey, we thought, why not? So we all put up money and we all got the thing going. But I mean, they existed. You know, he wasn't involved in their development.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason his name could be, the only way his name could be on them is because if he were to invest. So that was happening in 64, and then subsequently, because the thing began to build some momentum, and then I was with the jug band through 68, and during all that time, see, I was living in Cambridge, and we were working there, and finally we branched out from the making tuners to making pewter objects, plates, bowls, and pitchers.
Hmm.
And I can spin pewter to a form, and we were also casting some objects.
Huh.
And we had a little 1,200 square foot facility in Cambridge. And but after the jug band thing broke up, and it looked like I was going to be busier when I was going out on the road with Ian and Sylvia. We also decided that we'd sell off the pewter business, and my partner would take over the daily operation, and he was going to move out of town and do it from his house. And he moved up to Newburyport, and so that's where the Beacon Banjo Company was for a number of years. Then he moved from there to Putney, Vermont, and the Beacon Banjo Company was there until 3 years ago, when I took over the operation and brought it back here to Woodstock.
Did you just want to get back into it, or did you just feel that he wasn't doing an adequate job?
Well, first of all, he said he'd been doing it for so long, and he had another opportunity, and he felt like he also felt that it had gone through what, in business school terms, they would call the bell curve that sales often generate.
I understand.
As the news gets around and product gains acceptance, it sweeps up, and then it peaks out at the top, and then it starts coming down the other side. And he felt that it was most of the way down the other side.
Okay.
I'm not sure that... I mean, that's a frank answer to... I saw it differently. I saw as a vehicle for... well, he only essentially had one product, the tuners. And I've been adding other products to the line, and I have strings and bridges, tailpieces, and other banjo hardware and software. I've got some good instructional material for the tuners, and with audio and video and print media, and I can represent the homespun tapes, and I know people throughout the business, and I can find pretty much what somebody needs. And for me, after being out there on the road, essentially since the early 60s, it's just okay with me to take the exceptional, what I consider exceptional or out of the ordinary type of job offer that comes along, instead of having to or being chained to, let's say, the festival circuit or the club, the bar circuit or whatever, you know. So in very, very recent years, and I'm talking the last 3 years, concurrent with starting taking the Beacon Banjo Company over and being more full-time in Woodstock, not full-time, but I've been able to put together a little group with Three summers ago, we were in, we did a tour and a couple of festivals in Denmark, and also went to Canada. Last year, we were in Canada again, and we also played in at the first Irish Bluegrass Festival, and then I made my fifth trip to Japan last summer. And
what's the name of the band, Bill?
We're calling it the New Blue Velvet Band.
Okay.
Because it's Rooney and Weisberg and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all in the Blue Velvet Band.